You don't need rockets or planes. You don't need buses or trains to tour the world. On monitor to tour the world. On monitor.
Jim Lowe here. How are you? You were touring the Belgrade area this week. You might know that the World Congress of Nudists was meeting over there. I say might because if you relied on observation, you'd never be able to guess. It seems cold weather and rain forced the nudists to wear clothes. Would you say they were caught with their pants up? They couldn't even use their slogan, "We leave no stern untoned." Well, Bob Considine will be talking about some people who've been caught in the more usual state of embarrassment in just a couple of minutes after we hear some music. Supremes, please. A little of your wonderful, sweet, sweet love. On the monitor line next, Bob Considine with observations on the shaky business of making predictions in an election year. Robert?
Aren't you glad your mother didn't raise you to be a pollster, prognosticator, or pundit? Well, you should be. 1972 has made bums out of most of them. Early this year, they were in comfortable agreement that Senator Ed Muskie would clobber the opposition in the Democratic primaries so soundly that he'd wind up with the nomination on the first ballot at Miami Beach. Now his wife won't let him out of the house. They, the PPPs we'll call them, were equally content that no man from a vote-poor state like South Dakota could possibly get to first base on pledges to plunk a $1,000 bill in everybody's hands, skeletonize the defense budget, step up busing, encourage abortion, and fly to Hanoi to beg for the return of our POWs. So, George McGovern completely dominated the convention. They believed, by and large, that when the convention sailed into its factional horse latitudes, the reformers would run out of wind and the old pros would take charge under such stalwarts as Mayor Daley and George Meany and nominate Hubert Humphrey. Hubert, they said, knew the ropes. He certainly did know the ropes. He was on them from the very first round of the fight. They regarded George Wallace as a cornpone haranguer who would take votes from both major candidates, but never move and shake the nation as a whole. So some nut named Bremer shot the Alabama governor, and a wave of national sympathy immersed him, changed his image, and spiked Wallace's old guns. If the experts had ever heard of Senator Tom Eagleton before the convention, they exercised magnificent control in totally ignoring his chances of becoming the vice presidential choice. If they ever heard of our Sergeant Shriver, the belated choice for that post, they sure kept it quiet. They may have thought Sarge was in the Army. The PPPs duly noted a Dump Agnew conspiracy afoot in the White House, being unable, of course, to divine that the aforementioned nut, Bremer, was stalking Richard Nixon with a gun which might well have made Agnew president of the United States and leader of the free world. They surmised that Ted Kennedy, for all his disavowals, would come in for the good of the party, to coin a cliché, whereas Ted never really had any intention of exposing himself either to the moralists of this land nor its allopated Bremers. Yes, it's been a tough year for the pollsters, prognosticators, and pundits, and they've got 3 long months to go before election. I'm sure glad my mother raised me to be an unsung notary public. Bob Considine for Monitor.
Well, Bob, I'm glad my mother raised me to be a beacon keeper right here on the Monitor Beacon. Hello, back with Monitor and back with new music, too. Tony Messina's music, A World That's Filled with Love.
Up to now, my head's been spinning and my mind keeps turning round. And my feet are stepping nowhere 'cause they're 2 feet off the ground. And my ears are hearing nothing even though I've made a sound. Everybody's looking at me 'cause I wear a silly frown. Up to now my body's aching and my soul is stumbling round. And I feel just like a snowman that is melting to the ground. And my mind keeps thinking lightning when there is no storm around. Everybody that I talk to seems to be so out of time. Love.
Tony Messina's world, a world filled with love, not a bad one at all. Next, Joe Garagiola's world, and the filling is sports.
Last Monday in a little New York State town, some men were inducted into a sports hall of fame. I was not there. On Monday, I was in another little New York State town watching another group of men being inducted into another sports hall of fame. I was in Cooperstown, where Yogi Berra, Sandy Koufax, Earlie Wynn, Lefty Gomez, Buck Leonard, and the late Ross Youngs, Josh Gibson, and Will Herridge were put in the baseball shrine. Meanwhile, over at Saratoga, a group are being put into the Racing Hall of Fame, including the famous jockey Eric Guerin. Now, I know that it's often difficult to realize the sacrifices that have been made by athletes who become Hall of Famers. But maybe the sacrifice of Eric Guerin is one that all of us, male and female alike, can appreciate, because most of us certainly can identify with it. It's the sacrifice involving dieting. You know, one of the nice parts of the life of a baseball player is sitting down after a game and enjoying a great big dinner. And if you had a good day, that dinner tops it off. If you had a bad day, it's a form of therapy. It's a feeling that all of us can enjoy. Well, maybe not all of us. Jockeys, you see, sometimes have a little weight problem. And Eric Guerin had one of the toughest. In the early 40s, Guerin began his battle with the scales. Now, he was always weak. And that weakness was the cause of an accident in 1947, which gave him a broken back. As Guerin was recuperating, he was given a new diet by Dr. Alexander Kay, the physician for the Jockeys Guild. The diet had as its main ingredient the basic factor in any successful diet, willpower. The doctor said he couldn't furnish that. It would be up to Guerin to provide the willpower. And how did Eric Guerin do? Well, let me tell you what he says. The diet I've followed since then is a two-meal-a-day affair. For breakfast, I have one poached egg on toast and coffee, and then nothing. And that includes liquids, except for a little water when I need it, until dinner, when I have a helping of lean meat and a vegetable or salad. I've also taken therapeutic vitamin supplement and a weekly shot of vitamin B12. It's not easy to live that way for 25 years, but I'd do it all over again if I had to. The diet and the vitamins have made it possible for me to keep on riding, and that's all I ever wanted to do. Eric Guerin's most famous mount was Native Dancer, whom he rode in all but one of the horse's races. But there have been more than 2,600 other winners, too. And at least the victories tasted good, even if the dinner didn't. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
My fellow Missourian, Mr. Joe G., thank you very much, Joseph. And now we go to music, good monitor music. Lobo's here with a simple man and without his dog, Boo. Thank you.
guess that I am just possible man.
Lobo, Simple Man. And now a simple solution to a common problem.
Most heartburn, common indigestion, stuffiness are often caused by gas bubbles trapped in your stomach.
Plain antacids alone can't break up these trouble bubbles, but Digel can.
Digel combines antacids plus simethicone, unique anti-gas ingredient recommended by many doctors. Digel actually breaks up, dissolves bubbles away.
Heartburn, pressure, stuffiness go because Digel relieves both excess acid and gas.
For more complete relief, take Digel, D-I-G-E-L, liquid or tablets.
Millions of people suffer from occasional irregularity, and they've found that one of the most effective gentle laxatives they can take is Phenamint. Of all the leading laxatives, only Phenamint is a chewing gum, and for a very good reason. As you chew Phenamint, it goes into your system slowly, little by little. And as Phenamint goes into your system slowly, it goes to work gently, predictably. Phenamint, the gentle, predictable laxative. Also available in soft, chewable mints. Phenamint.
Camford playing the Oscar-winning theme from Shaft. Our local stations are going to play their money-making themes right about here, after which Monitor and yours truly, Jim Lowe, are going to resume. So stay tuned.
Swanson, hostess for the New York Summer Festival. I think one of the most fascinating things you can do this summer is to tour New York's neighborhoods. Yorkville, Harlem, Chinatown, see Little Italy, the Arab section of Brooklyn, and all the others. Go there, communicate with people, try the food. New York is truly a summer festival.
For all of Monitor's honky cats.
Time.
Hang on, here we go again. Jim Lowe with you, and this is Monitor, where in just a few minutes we're going to hear a prediction about a major earthquake, which will occur in the United States in the next 5 months. Try to put this one down, huh? The man who will make that forecast has accurately predicted 60 major quakes in the past. Before we hear him, though, let's hear from Carole King. Not inappropriately, her song is called I Feel the Earth Move. It said that she actually wrote that during the Los Angeles earthquake. Well, it shouldn't be a total loss. Make a buck out of it, right? And now, as promised, that report on an upcoming earthquake. Here's Monitor's Jay Miller.
If the calculations of a California scientist are accurate, at approximately 9 o'clock in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, on January 4th, 1973, there will be an earthquake in the vicinity of San Francisco, California. It will be a substantial earthquake. And we're talking to a man who has made a life out of predicting earthquakes and has now achieved what he feels is a significant breakthrough in this field, and in fact, using rather complex formulas and computers, has come up with new data. Let's talk to him about this forthcoming January earthquake. Dr. Reuben Greenspan, how many earthquakes have you predicted in the past?
About 60, I think. Of which 30 were predicted publicly, the others in the course of my research.
How serious do you think that this San Francisco earthquake of January 4th, 1973 might be?
I think it's going to be serious indeed. It frightens me a little bit. I think it'll be as serious as the Quetta quake in Quetta, India. I was 2 minutes out in that one.
But how serious was the Quetta one?
About 7 on approximately the Richter scale.
How many fatalities?
There were 56,000 people died in it.
And you were 2 minutes off in your prediction?
Yes, 2 minutes.
Well, now, when you say you've made this prediction, I assume that as a scientist, what you have done is you've committed it on paper ahead of time and distributed this information. It's not just a question that you tell people later on, well, I knew that was coming. You've put something down in...
The science editor of the New York Times, Mr. Walter Mark Kempfert, and Bill Lawrence, and all the news services in New York had these predictions weeks in advance. I once gave a radio talk on NBC. I had predicted an earthquake for a given time, and they had me come to the broadcasting station at a specific time. And while I was standing there with the man who was interviewing me, a man came in with a teletype sheet, and the earthquake in Copaiba, Peru, was just coming in, the data on it, as we were talking on the radio.
Well, now, with all of this hardcore evidence, why has there not been more public acceptance and knowledge of your work and theory?
For many years, all I did was work. It's an incredible amount of mathematical work. I can't work with other people. I work alone. And computing, checking, going through thousands of earthquakes, crustal faults, it was a monumental task. And then, happily, I sort of stumbled over an elegant solution to the three-bodied problem. Because you have three bodies, you have the sun, the earth, and the moon, all in motion relative one to another. Where, at a given instant, is there a maxima of tidal stress? And does this tidal stress fall on a given point where there is indeed a crustal fault?
And you know where most of these crustal faults are.
The crustal faults have been charted and mapped all over the world.
And San Francisco, I believe, happens to be
The San Andreas Fault, one of the major faults of the world. Runs all the way down from Alaska, clean down to Mexico.
What areas would you also say that are now inhabited that are possibly going to have devastating earthquakes?
The west coast of South America may have some next year, but I'll know better after my computer run a month from now, because I'm going to make all this data public at that time.
One final question. Where are you going to be on January 4th, 1973? Are you going to be near San Francisco to see what happens?
I'll be there with my cameras taking pictures of it from a safe point. An area is not dangerous if you don't have a house falling on you. People get hurt when buildings collapse, or if they're out in the street where parts of buildings fall down on them. But all you've got to do is go out into an open space, and you're quite safe.
Well, Dr. Greenspan, it's not a happy prediction that you've made, but it's perhaps one that will convince people. And if your mathematical breakthrough in this equation really does come to pass, I think it's going to one that's going to attract a lot of attention, and thank you for sharing it with our listeners.
You're welcome indeed.
This is Jay Miller reporting with Dr. Reuben Greenspan from Tucson, Arizona.
Well, there goes one prediction I sincerely hope is 100% wrong, and I'm sure you agree.
Just stay where you are, and we'll bring you more.
Right again, and some of the more is Guy LeBeau with sports news ahead on the Monitor Beacon.
Thank you.
Jim Lowe and Monitor taking three steps forward to catch up with the association for some gong kicking.
Three steps forward and two steps back, then count how far you come. Is this what they mean when they say just keep on trucking along? Or is this what they say when they mean what they said when they meant, hey boy, move on? And then bring it all back down. Brush your feet or comb your hair, stand on your head and run it all around. There's a man you gotta see over on the south side if you wanna keep digging that gong around.
Association kicking the gong around. And now,
it's time to catch up on sports.
Right, and catching for Monitor Sports, Guy LeBeau.
Thank you, Jim. Hello, everybody. As an earlier exclusive story this evening, this commentator said that the brilliant 6'10 forward of South Carolina, All-American Tom Riker, surprisingly may sign a professional contract with the Indiana Pacers of the ABA. They're the league champions. A deal has been set. If only the Carolina Cougars, who drafted Riker and are procrastinating about him, will release him. But you can check it out. Call the Indiana Pacers. They cannot deny it. They're trying for Tom Riker, and I think they've got him. Here's the way the baseball picture lines up in the American League. The Oakland Athletics regained first place in the West. They beat the White Sox 3-0. A great pitching job by Vida Blue, his best this year. The Yankees pulled closer to division-leading Baltimore. They swept two from Milwaukee. They now trail one game behind Baltimore. Baltimore plays later. Detroit won over Cleveland and trailed Baltimore by half a game. Detroit's in a nightcap now. The National League, Pittsburgh split with St. Louis. The Mets lost. The Pirates are 10 games in front of them in the East. In the West, the Reds lead Houston by 5.5 games. They won while the Astros were losing theirs. In tennis, the U.S. clay court singles champions are Chris Evert, who beat Yvonne Goolagong today, and Bob Hewitt, who beat Jimmy Connors of Belleville, Illinois. This evening at the Westchester Country Club Golf Classic, there was a hole-in-one by Jim Colbert, but he didn't get the big prize, as sports director Len Dillon will now report.
Jack Nicklaus won the 6th annual Westchester Golf Classic today with a sparkling and course record 18 under 270 for 72 holes. And in shooting 18 under for 72, he tied the record established by Arnold Palmer here last year. And in addition to winning his $50,000, Jack Nicklaus got a big silver tray. And in winning $50,000 today, he's won close to $250,000 so far this year, and that's not bad. Finishing in second place was Jim Colbert, 15 under with a 273. Dwight Neville finished fourth, 13 under a 275, and Homero Blancas, 12 under a 276. But the news is, Nicklaus won his third Westchester Golf Classic today, and he won it in impressive fashion. From the Westchester Country Club in Harrison, New York, Len Dillon, Monitor Sports.
Thank you, Lynn. You know, it's ironic that during a year when the New York Yankees have finally come back to baseball with their very good play, that death should claim George Weiss, who as their general manager for 13 years brought them 10 pennants and 8 world championships. He was a nice, timid gentleman whom I worked for and who I was mistakenly thought to be cold and distant. He brought the Yankees such stars as DiMaggio, Mantle, Berra, Whitey Ford. But you know, the most controversial move he ever made was really his best. He brought to the Yankees Casey Stengel, who previously as a manager had been a gross failure everywhere, but as Yankee manager he became a mortal in his own time. Stengel loved George Weiss, who provided him with money and friendship and cooperation liberally, and just an hour ago when I spoke to Casey Stengel at his home in California, he sadly told me he regretted not seeing Weiss at the Hall of Fame inductions this year. Weiss was ill.
Him at the Hall of Fame. If you put a man in there, he had to be put in there for something, or why did they put you in there? And if you'd have come up there, he might have had his last good party. But a man like him, why should a man then want to go up there if he's limping? Why should a man up there go up there if I'm staggering? Why should a man want to go up there if you're crippled? Or if there's something like that, the man had that principle. He said, it's the greatest thing in the world. I'd love to go there to have a good time. But, he said, I don't think, and he was a timid man, never went on Maytown. He couldn't breathe, have the fact that he went up there, you know, with a physical handicap he had at that time, where he couldn't get out of the room, which was sadness. And I think they sent him a report that they were very sad that it didn't come.
You're right, Case. Weiss was a proud man. He wouldn't go there while he wasn't feeling well. And it's to the constant dishonor of the Yankees that they dumped Weiss unceremoniously in 1961, ostensibly because he was too old. The Yanks were on an alleged youth movement at that time. Weiss promptly joined the Mets and began the job that gave the Mets a world championship in 1969. The Yankee management forgot that some men are perpetually young. And one such, George Weiss. This is Guy Lebeau at the Monitor Sports Desk. Back again to Jim Lowe.
Thank you very much, Guy. Right now, here's old Elvis. Elvis Presley himself and Burning Love.
Which way?
Elvis Presley and Burning Love. His own real-life one is apparently burned down. He announced this week that he's getting a divorce. Well, the final figures are in on Hurricane Agnes, and according to government sources, the tropical storm took 118 lives and caused $3 billion worth of property damage. To help rebuild storm-wrecked cities and towns, the American Red Cross needs your help. So please send whatever you can now to the American National Red Cross, Flood Relief, Washington, D.C., 20006, 20006. Hot butter, serving up popcorn. Well, the Monitor News staff is serving up the latest news next, so stay tuned. I'm Jim Lowe, and I'll be back.
World news and late information, next on this Monitor station. World news and late information,
Any way you look at it, 1 million youngsters is a lot of kids. That's almost how many boys are served daily by nearly 1,000 Boys Clubs of America. These youngsters are given guidance, educational activity, supervised recreation, and dozens of interesting programs. But it's estimated that 3 million more boys across the country need the services of a Boys Club. 3 million more deserving youngsters who need a place to go and a way to grow. Someone once said, a boy has two jobs. One is just being a boy. The other is growing up to be a man. Words of wisdom from Plato, or Socrates, or Thoreau. Nope. It's a quote by the 31st President of the United States. And Herbert Hoover knew well of what he spoke. He served 28 years as board chairman of the country's experts on growing boys. The Boys Clubs of America. Support your local Boys Club, and you'll be giving a boost to tomorrow's generation. The only next one we've got.